All right.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm good. Today was a very busy day. It's like we're recording on a Tuesday right mm-hmm. now. It's always very busy. But it's exciting because today is our 1 year anniversary.
Woo! We've been recording for you guys for a whole year.
Today.
So thank you to all who have been here since the beginning and so also people who have been here since maybe even just this episode.
That's so true. How freaking cool. If you hear this episode, you should know we record on a hamper. So sometimes, currently there's no clothes in it, so sometimes it gets bumped and it makes a lot of noise. But yeah, I can't believe it. So year special, I guess, already came out because this is actually being recorded in the future.
Yes, this is pre-recorded. We're ahead of the game, you guys.
I know. We're really doing good. So this is a future. So we've already done our year recording. Today's actually the 1 year anniversary that we're recording this, but we decided to re-record Hereditary.
Our first episode.
Yeah, which we thought was really good, but the audio is pretty bad. So. Yeah.
I thought the content was really good, so we're going to provide you with a similar episode with the very same content, but with better editing.
Yeah, so those of you who could never get through it before can get through it now. Also, it is our most listened to episode, just because a lot of people start with that episode.
Yeah, it's the first episode.
And so, we are going to replace that audio, so if you
go back to the beginning and listen to it, you're going to get the restored audio.
Restored audio, so you won't have to listen to our crap anymore. And hopefully we'll keep more listeners this way. So, yeah, it's really exciting.
Yeah.
We are really excited to re-record it. It's something we've been talking about doing for a long time.
Yep.
And we thought,
What better thing to do for the year anniversary?
Exactly. But this one's really exciting, too. I mean, we're recording it now because we're going to publish it in the future. We would publish it now, but
we just saw it, though.
We just saw it. And also the anniversary. But it's this year, 2020...
Best Picture Oscar winner.
That's right. And it's the first foreign film to ever win Best Picture.
Yep. It also won Best Original Screenplay.
I should say foreign language film.
Foreign language film.
Not foreign film.
Yeah. And it won Best Original Screenplay and Best Director.
Mm-hmm.
And then it won the SAG Award for Best Ensemble Cast.
It also, of course, won Best Foreign Language Film.
Yes, it did. So it took the big four.
Did four foreign language films and four regular films.
Yes. Very impressive. This film was directed by Bong Joon-ho.
Yes, he directed Snowpiercer.
And other things, but I've only seen Snowpiercer, which is a really good film, and the guy who plays Mr. Kim in this film is also in Snowpiercer. They've worked together on multiple films.
Well, I ain't seen it at all. This is the first one I've seen.
We'll watch Snowpiercer sometime.
I'm sure.
It's very good. Chris Evans is in it, and he's very good. Tilda Swinton.
Ah, Tilda Swinton.
She's excellent. She's excellent in it.
So, yeah, this movie.
I had seen it right when it came out at the local independent movie house that we have here in town.
I was in England when it came out, and it did not get played on any of my movie theaters. So the reason we actually waited so long to do this is because it's not out anywhere on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got lucky because after it won Best Picture, the independent theater decided to show it again.
Yes.
For those who had missed it before all the hype, aka me. So we got to see it, which was really good. So it was your second time seeing it.
Yes.
And my first time seeing it.
Yes, yes. So we get two perspectives on that, which will be interesting. It was so much fun watching your face through the whole movie.
I was like,
that's so what the movie is. You go in thinking it's something and then it turns into something completely different.
I mean, it just, you couldn't predict it.
No, there's no predicting it.
Because it just comes out of nowhere.
And, but it's so, so good. So, I'm sure you've seen, have you seen this movie, you guys? I don't know. Maybe you're listening to this because it did win Best Picture.
But we gotta tell you
about the plot.
If this is your first time on our wonderful, wonderful podcast, then something you ought to know is that we spoil the movies, and we spoil them real hard.
Real, real hard.
So, I'm about to read to you.
But I would encourage watching this film before you listen to this.
I would too, because it will
blow your mind.
It will this is not one of the movies that, like, hearing about it is gonna make the experience not change it.
Yeah.
This is a, you hearing this will change your experience of the movie.
Yes, definitely.
So you need to watch the movie first. So if you haven't, and you stick around, then don't be mad at me when you're like, but you ruined the surprise. Yeah, I just told you.
Yeah, I just told you I was going to ruin the surprise.
I'm trying to plug in my phone, but it's not charging.
That sucks.
Let's see. Well, give me 1 second. Jane Vamp.
Oh, okay. So...
Come on, Jane!
How wild is polyamory? That's a really interesting. It's like, there's no research done on it, which, you know, in my attraction, love, and romance class, I asked about that because I was like, well, I have a lot of friends who are, you know, in happy polyamorous relationships. So is there any research done on that and, like, statistics about it? And she said no. So I think that that's a huge gap in the research that maybe should be addressed.
Well, I'm no psychologist. But someone should do that. Free dissertation. We just gave you a free dissertation.
Yeah, guys.
You're welcome, edutainment. The vamp is over and I'm back with my phone plugged in. 3% battery, baby. We're gonna make it. The plot of Parasite. 2019. The Kim family. Oh, okay. If you're on our Patreon, we just did our first anime.
Yes.
Perfect Blue, a couple weeks back now. Remember when I apologized for how I was going to pronounce every single name?
We're going to do that again.
We're going to go ahead and apologize just up front.
Sorry.
I'm going to say these wrong. Please don't yell at me. Oh, man. I know I'll get one of them right. Okay, Father Kitake?
We call him Mr. Kim.
Mr. Kim? Yeah, so let's just... Why do they even have their real names? Mother Chung Suk.
Who we call basically, mostly known as the housekeeper.
Yeah, her name is said quite a bit.
Yeah.
Daughter Ki Jung and son Ki Woo.
So the son is Kevin. Daughter's Jessica. That's what they,
the American names they go by. Yeah. Live in a small semi-basement apartment. And then they put the Japanese or the Korean word for that, which I will not even bother saying. If you know Korean.
It's a sub-basement.
It's a sub-basement apartment. A semi-basement apartment. So it's slightly above.
Yeah, you, like have, that little window at the top. Yeah.
Have low-paying temporary jobs as pizza box folders and struggle to make ends meet. One day, Min... Hyuk? Who they basically just call Min the whole time.
Min, yeah, that's what they just call
A friend of Kiwoo's and a university student gives the family a scholar's rock, which is meant to promise wealth to whoever possesses it. He suggests that when he leaves to study abroad, Ki Woo should take over his job as an English tutor to the wealthy Park family's daughter, Da Hai?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, the daughter. Ki Woo poses as a university student and is hired by the Parks. Mrs. Park decides they will call him Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequently, the Kim family begins to infiltrate the home of the Parks by recommending each other's services, posing as unrelated but sophisticated skilled workers.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah.
Ki Woo tutors and begins a romance with Da Hai. Ki Jung poses as Jessica, an art therapist, who agrees to counsel the Park's restless son, Da Song. Ki Jung frames Mr. Park's chauffeur as having sex in the car, and Ki Take, Mr. Kim, is hired to replace him. Finally, Chung Suk takes over as the Park's housekeeper after the Kims exploit the severe peach allergy of the longtime keeper. Moon Gwang and... Oh, yeah, the longtime housekeeper, Moon Gwang.
Yes, that's what her name is.
That's her name. And convince Mrs. Park that she has tuberculosis. Mrs. Park is not the brightest woman.
She's not. She's simple.
Nice.
Yeah.
But she definitely, like...
She has really no awareness of what's going on.
She has no awareness of what's practical or what could really be true.
Yeah.
And she doesn't care to figure it out.
No. No, she really doesn't. She's just kind of in her own little bubble of wealth.
Yeah. When the Parks leave to go on a camping trip, the Kim family revels in the luxuries of the Park residence. They have a very nice house. They're very, very rich.
It's very, very pretty.
Moon Gwang suddenly returns, saying she has left something in the house's basement. So basically, the Kims come over and
they're drinking and
partying inside the house because they're supposed to be on a camping trip all weekend. But then Moon Gwang shows up
and is like, I left something. Can you please let me in?
Yeah. And so they do.
Yeah.
Bad call.
Not a good decision.
But they do. And they basically just hide from her. And it all is kind of fine. Until. There, she reveals to Chung-suk a hidden entrance to an underground bunker created by the house's architect and previous owner. Moon Gwang was the actual... She was the housekeeper for the original...
Architect
who, built the house and lived in it. But then after he moved out...
She just stayed on as
the house. She stayed on as the housekeeper for the house, for the park.
So she knows all the secrets about the house.
And also, she's a really good housekeeper.
Yeah.
Moon Gwang's husband... Oh, gosh, dang. Juan Se? Hyun Se?
We don't really say his name very much.
No, we do not. Began secretly living underneath the home to hide from loan sharks before the Parks moved in years ago. Mm-hmm. So in the intermediate time between when the architects moved out and the Parks moved in, they were living in the house.
Yeah, they were just...
Like, secretly. They were secretly squatting in the house.
Yeah, yeah. They're hiding from loan sharks.
Yeah, but I guess the architect kind of knew but didn't really care because he liked her.
Yeah.
And he wasn't living in the house. Yep, so they were living, they were squatting in the house. Moon Gwang pleads with Chung-suk to continue to help her husband survive in the bunker, but she refuses. After the truth about the Kim family is accidentally revealed, basically... Well,
they like, fall down the stairs.
Yeah.
And they call, Kevin calls Mr. Kim his dad.
Yeah.
And she puts it together that they're a family.
Yeah, and she, basically video recorded it.
And is gonna send it to,
the Parks.
Yeah.
If they don't, basically they don't agree to let her and her husband keep living there.
Mm-hmm.
Moon Gwang threatens to tell the Parks their secret if the Kins do not keep her own. Because of a rainstorm, the Parks return home early from their camping trip, which is also Dasong's birthday trip.
Yes.
And the Kim family scrambles to clean up the home while a brawl breaks out among Moon Gwang, her husband, and the Kims. The Kims trap Moon Gwang's husband. I'm just not saying his name anymore. And a mortally wounded Moon Gwang in the bunker. After Chung-suk serves her dinner, Miss Park reveals to her that Dasong had a seizure-inducing traumatic experience years ago, when she witnessed a ghost emerging from the basement.
Mm-hmm.
The ghost, it turns out, is actually...
Moon Gwang's husband.
Moon Gwang's husband, who was living there, right? And he would sneak out... Basically, he would sneak out to get food
mm-hmm.
at night, but her son...
And he's kind of... He's kind of creepy looking, too.
Yes, he is. And Dasong was basically awake when he shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
He was, like, sneaking food in the kitchen, eating his own cake, and that's when he saw him and got so freaked out that he had a seizure, basically. Mm-hmm. The Kims escape the Park's house, but not before hearing Mr. Park's offhanded comments about how Mr. Kim smells bad. The Kims return to their apartment to find it completely flooded by the storm and are forced to sleep in a gymnasium along with other displaced people. The next day, Mrs. Park decides to host a party for Dosong's birthday. She invites Ki Jung, Jessica, and Ki Woo, Kevin,
mm-hmm.
while Mr. Kim and Chung-suk are required to attend as employees. But they are paid overtime.
Yeah.
But Jessica and Ki-woo are invited as guests.
Yes, yeah, because they're more like friends of the family.
Yeah, they're like tutors.
Tutors. And
they're so, not like service workers.
Yeah, they're a little above them in the social ranking.
Yeah, yeah. In the middle of the party, Ki-woo heads down to the bunker with the Scholar's Rock to face the husband.
Mm-hmm.
After finding Moon Gwang dead, also, they didn't talk about this in the Wikipedia article, but at one point, Moon Gwang basically, they tie her up, and Moon Gwang is able to get up the stairs and out the basement, where she's about to basically blow the cover.
Yeah.
But Chung-suk pushes her down the stairs.
And she just dies.
And she hits her head.
Yeah.
And she doesn't die immediately, but it's a bad wound, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
She Brain has injury. A concussion. And she's bleeding. She needs to go to the hospital. But they can't take her to the hospital because they can't get her out of the house.
Yeah.
Essentially. So, she dies in the nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, her husband couldn't help her or call for help because he was tied up, too.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really sad.
Really, really sad.
Also, during this time, they also didn't talk about this. I think it's kind of important. her husband has been living in this underground bunker for, like, years, right? Mm-hmm. So he learned Morse code so that he can communicate with his wife, essentially, during the daytime through this light that flickers. Like, it's a broken light that they can't fix. But really, he's turning the breaker on and off using Morse code. And it's, like, a button breaker, I guess.
Yeah.
So he's, like... While she's hurt, she's mortally wounded, he's, like, frantically using his head to beat out, help me, help me, help me, over and over and over. And their son, DeSong, is a Boy Scout.
And so he knows Morse code.
So he knows Morse code, and he actually is camping out in the yard and sees the light because he can't sleep.
Yeah.
And actually, like, reads the code, gets the message, but doesn't do anything because he's too young.
Yeah, I actually, there's a theory about that, about how that's kind of the point of that scene is to say that the rich know what the poor are going through, but they're doing nothing.
Oh, yeah. He even writes it down in this notebook, then his parents look in the tent multiple times, and it's like, it's almost like kind of hard to believe that they didn't see that their son had written that out.
Yeah.
But essentially, he does get free. And, right, like I said, Ki Woo's down there, he finds Moon Gwang dead, and he's attacked by her husband, who bludgeons him with the rock and then escapes. Seeking to avenge Moon Gwang, her husband stabs Ki Jung, Jessica, with a kitchen knife in front of the horrified guests at the birthday party.
It's so intense.
It's, he, DeSong suffers a trauma-induced seizure upon seeing, the husband, whose name I do not know. Cannot say.
Mr. Park?
Nope.
Mr. Kim?
Nope. The other guy. Moon...
Oh,
Moon
yes.
Gwang's husband.
Moon Gwang's husband.
And a struggle breaks out until Chung Sook kills Moon Gwang's husband with a skewer. Basically, he actually was really going after Chung Sook.
Mm-hmm.
But he just killed her you know what I mean? He killed her family, both probably to draw her out and also as repayment in case he didn't kill her. I mean, get one of yours, you got one of mine, kind of thing.
Yeah.
While Mr. Kim attempts to help Ki Jung, Mr. Park, aka Jessica, Mr. Park orders him to drive DeSong to the hospital. In the chaos, Mr. Kim, upon seeing Mr. Park's disgusted reaction, okay, so this is, again, kind of misleading. Essentially, he tells Mr. Kim, drive us to the hospital, because earlier in the movie, we find out that I don't know, the statistics or something are that little children under a certain age, when they have a seizure, they have only 15 minutes to get to the hospital before it causes, like, permanent damage or death.
Yes.
So 15 minutes is all you have before you need to, like, be receiving assistance.
Yeah.
And an ambulance would not get there in that time. So they're ordering him to drive them to the hospital because they need to get their son there as fast as possible.
But he doesn't want to because he's tending to Jessica.
Who's his daughter, right? Yeah. Who's bleeding out.
Yeah.
And so Mr. Park kind of realizes that he's not leaving and says, throw me the keys. And he does, but he doesn't do a very good throw. And it lands underneath the struggle of
Moon Gwang's husband.
And Chung Sook.
And there's this scene where Mr. Park, like, turns over Moon Gwang's husband. And,
after,
like,
he's dead.
After he's dead. And he, like, smells the basement smell.
Like the poor person
smell. Poor person smell. And then he, like, covers his nose.
Even though it's like, okay, this could literally not be a worse time to be worrying about this.
Yeah.
Like, your son is dying. And you need to get these keys. And you're right now...
Plugging your nose.
Taking your time to react to this smell.
Yeah.
Which is not even that bad. Okay. So upon Mr. Kim seeing him react to that smell, he takes the knife and kills Mr. Park before fleeing the scene.
So intense.
Yeah. Weeks later, Ki Woo has survived the attack. That's Kevin.
Yeah, he has brain damage. He had to have brain surgery.
He woke up after brain surgery. That's right. Because remember, Moon Gwang's husband basically brained him with a stone.
Yeah. So but he has, like, this condition whenever he first comes out of the,
where he just can't stop laughing.
And, you know, his sister's dead and his dad is missing and he just really can't stop laughing.
It's so sad. Also, something that is a little interesting is when he goes down there with the stone, I think the stone's really interesting and I'm sure you probably have some stuff on the stone.
Yeah, yeah.
But I always find it really interesting that you don't really know what he's going down there with the stone for. Like, is he planning on killing them?
Or is he just...
Or is he going to give it to them as an act of goodwill?
Yeah, because he keeps talking about how, like, the stone is, like, attached to him. And yeah. how he can't let it go and stuff.
I know. So it's like, is he going to go down there and give it to them as an act of goodwill because he thinks it did bring them
Yeah, that money? Wealth.
And they need the wealth now? Like, what is it...
What are his intentions?
What are his intentions? We don't know. Like, we don't know what he's going down there for. We do know that earlier, Jessica and her mother do talk about how they need to talk to Moon Gwang and her husband and try and come to some sort of common ground and how they overreacted.
Yeah.
Which, of course, they don't know Moon Gwang's dead, so way too late for that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted to, like, come to a, like, a compromise.
Yeah, they wanted to come to an understanding and not have to
tell on each other
or anything.
Yeah. Also, it's so interesting if they just agreed to not tell on each other in the first place, this wouldn't have even happened. But, you know. So, he and Chung-sook are convicted of fraud, but only put on probation.
Mm-hmm.
Ki-jung has died from her injury, and Mr. Kim, who is wanted for Mr. Park's murder, has vanished. Her husband, Moon Gwang's husband, his motives for the attack are a mystery to the public. Ki-woo scopes out the Park's home, which is now... So that's Kevin.
Yeah.
Scopes out the Park's home, which has now been sold to a German family, unaware of its history, and he sees a message in Morse code from the flickering light.
His dad learned Morse code and is sending him a message.
Yeah, it is from Mr. Kim, who escaped to the bunker and now survives by scavenging from the new homeowners. Still living in the semi-basement apartment with his mother, Ki-woo writes an unsent letter to Mr. Kim, vowing that he will earn enough money to one day purchase the house and free his father.
Oh.
There is a scene, like, after he writes the letter, where it flashes forward in the future, and he's, like...
Wealthy and buying the house,
and bringing his mom, and his dad comes out of the basement, and they, like, reunite.
Mm-hmm.
But then it flashes back, and he's finishing the letter.
Yeah. So, I think that he... Actually, I have something on that as well.
Okay.
It's
sort of this, like, did it... Will it happen? Did it happen? Is it just a fantasy?
Yeah.
You don't... It's not really known. Although, I think if we're looking at this movie in terms of a class metaphor, I do not think he does it.
I don't think he does it either. Mainly, it's so hard to get out of poverty.
Yeah. Mainly just... I mean, to be fair, he has a good motivator. And people do do it. And he does have a good motivator. But also...
Yeah.
How does he afford university?
It says, despite dreaming it up at the end of the film, it would actually take Kim Ki-woo 540 years to buy the home his dad is trapped in based on his average salary. The total was calculated by the director.
Yeah, so he would have to go to university. He basically would have to go to university and change jobs.
Yeah.
Because what they were doing...
Wouldn't have worked.
Would have never made them enough money.
Yeah.
So, I also think what's really interesting is that it's like the Parks never figure out that they're family until...
Never.
Until it comes out legally.
Yeah, exactly. They, like, never put it together. And they keep saying throughout the entire film, rich people are so gullible. And rich people are so nice because they can afford to be nice.
Yeah.
And basically. That type of stuff. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah, I think the whole metaphor for class warfare is very interesting here. Because for the first whole part, for the first half, I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Before Moon Gwang shows up.
That is the end of an act, whenever she
opens
the sub-basement, because everything changes.
Exactly. So, before that, like, turning point, they are the parasites, if it makes sense. Like,
yes.
They are putting other people out of work, they're lying,
they're feeding off of this wealthy family.
They're feeding off of the rich, who, to us, for the most part, this family seems very nice. Like, they've been very kind, they've been very sweet and upfront. I mean, they're a little dumb, and they mm-hmm. did let their workers go in not the best way.
Yeah, they were like, oh, I'll just make up an excuse and fire them.
Yeah, instead of asking them or confronting them about the events. But for the most part, like, we know our protagonists need money, and we don't really feel that bad, right? Like, we don't really care. But it's only after you see Moon Gwang and her husband that you realize these people are just as poor, if not poorer, than the Kim family. I mean, they've literally been living in a sub-basement. Like, or not a sub-basement, a
An actual
bunker,
basement. Yeah, a bunker.
Hiding and scavenging. for, like, I don't know.
4 years or something.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And, like, you have, so bad. And then, I think what's really interesting, I think, like, one of the first times you really start to see the true, like, inter-class warfare is that Chung Sook freaks out.
She freaks out.
And it's like, you guys are doing the same thing. Your entire family is in their house right now. You're making plans to get married to the daughter
and have these be your in-laws and hire actors to play your parents.
Just so you can stay in this house.
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy. And you're mad at them because they've been living here without telling.
Yeah.
And then when Moon Gwang sees that they've been lying, right? Like, they basically forced her out of a job. Mm-hmm. They forced the driver out of the job. She figures it out, right? What we already knew. When she sees that, she gets mad.
Yeah, they're like, how dare you take advantage of the Parks like that?
I know, and they both say, like, the Parks are such nice people. How could you do this? And it's like, well, the Parks fired you the minute it looked like you had one problem.
Yeah.
You've been working here for like 10 years, no problems at all. The driver never had a problem. They loved the driver. One slip up, and that was all it took for them to... You thought they cared about you? No.
Yeah, exactly. And I think something that really speaks to that is how they fired the driver basically for finding those panties. Mm-hmm. And then during the sex scene, like, the scene whenever they're underneath the coffee table and the Parks are getting each other off. He's like, oh, you know, it'd make me so hard if you put on those underwear.
The cheap underwear.
And then she was like, oh, buy me drugs.
Yeah.
And that speaks to, like, the hypocrisy.
Exactly. It's like, and not to say that, I don't think the Parks are, like, bad people.
No.
They do seem fairly nice. It's just that they see no reason to keep around people who... They don't see their workers as people, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because if you saw your workers on the same level as you, you would say, okay, well, maybe it's just a slip-up. Or maybe it's just a misunderstanding. Or maybe they're sick and we need to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they're like, oh, we'll fire them. We'll find a reason to fire
them. They're expendable.
Even though you yourself also have problems. Like, you have some weird panty thing. And you're addicted to drugs. Like... Pills, probably.
Yeah, we see several incidents that kind of
hint that
the scene where she's, like, you know, passed out on the table, and then a couple of scenes whenever she's, like, just staggering around.
Yeah, it seems like she probably takes some pills, like uppers or downers. Or
yeah.
Probably uppers.
Yeah.
But it definitely seems like she is taking some prescription medication not correctly.
Yes.
And it's, yeah, and that's, like, that's the first time we ever see, like, the Parks having flaws. And then it's like, I mean, to be fair, it's always interesting that the Parks seem like really nice people until the service workers start to toe that line between professional and friendly.
Yes.
Too much.
Yeah, because they do not want to be associated with them in a friend way.
No. And they will always immediately put them in their place.
Yes.
Like,
But he keeps saying that the smell crosses the line.
Yeah.
Which is so sad.
I know. Especially because how could you not realize that the people you're hiring as, like, your drivers and your maids are probably not...
Living in the best conditions.
And wealthy.
Like, yeah.
They're probably not... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if that is really a problem for you, why don't you put them somewhere where they're not living like that?
Yeah.
Why don't you give them a room in the house? You know what I, like...
Build a bunk house or something.
Exactly. I mean, there's so many things you could do if that really bothered you that would be kind to them.
Yes.
And, but that's the thing, is it's just like little stuff like that. They're like, oh, we'll fire them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just don't care.
I know. And it's, I don't know. And then towards the end, I think when we see, like, because it seems like it's poor person struggling against poor person to protect the rich person.
Yes.
Which is dumb, right? Okay. But the moment it kind of switches, I think, is after Moon Gwang's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband's dead. And that's when Mr. Kim kind of sees how awful the Park family really is. Like, how much they just do not care about poor people at all.
No, they just don't care, and they're disgusted by them.
Yeah, because we talked about the smell. He sees the smell, and that's what sets Mr. Kim off. Because Mr. Kim heard him talking about how Mr. Kim smells like that. Like the poor person smell.
Yeah.
And he's so upset by it. And also, another scene I think is really interesting. At the same party, Mr. Kim is told to, like, dress up like a Native American.
Mm-hmm.
Along with his dad, and they're gonna, basically it's just gonna be like a cute little thing for DeSong's birthday, because he's obsessed with Indians. And the night before, Mr. Kim's entire house was flooded.
Yeah.
And they had a huge
they
fight.
They lost everything.
You know what I mean? Yeah, they lost everything. They had a huge fight with Moon Gwang and her husband. They're worried about that. Like, he's stressed. He still showed up, is still doing the thing Mr. Park asks. He never says, I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just looks like, to Mr. Park, it's just like, oh, he's not having a good enough time doing
this.
He's
not into it. And then he reminds him, oh, you're getting paid extra for this. This is a job. Treat this like your job.
Yeah. And it's, you know what I mean? It's just one of those things where it's before. And also, inviting Jessica to the party as a guest and then being like, oh, Jessica, you're going to be a part of this little play.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so I'm not a guest. I'm not a guest to you. And also, the way they treat Jessica and Kevin much, much better than they do their parents.
Definitely.
Because they're, you know, in an educated field. Like, even if they're not as rich as them, they're upper middle class in their heads.
Yes.
So they're worth something.
Exactly. It's so upsetting.
Yeah. And so, obviously, that sets Mr. Kim off. He stabs Mr. Park. And it's kind of that, the almost like the break between the classes, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
very much
the
so.
The poor people finally rebelling.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm.
It's really good.
It is really good.
Do you want to hear some facts?
I want to hear facts and theories. Facts and theories.
Okay, I first have some stuff from BuzzFeed.
Okay, BuzzFeed.
Let's see. The Kim family's house, alleyway, and neighborhood houses were all built on a set that doubled as a water tank.
Oh!
I know. The first floor and the private front yard of the Park home were built in an empty lot in South Korea. A green screen was then placed on top, and a second floor was added digitally. Each room in the home was built on a separate soundstage.
Wow.
I know.
That looked really good.
The film was initially imagined as a play when Bong Joon-ho first came up with the idea in 2013.
This would be a good play.
It would be a good play. Bong pulled inspiration from his own life. He worked as a tutor for a wealthy family when he was in college and often felt like he was spying on them.
Fair. Rich people are weird.
Rich people are weird. Both Choi Woo-shik and Song Kang-ho, that's Kevin and Mr. Kim, had no idea what the movie would even be about before they accepted their roles in it. Both actors had previously worked with the director on other projects and trusted him completely.
Mm-hmm.
The girl who played Jessica also didn't know what she was getting into. She just accepted the role blindly as well.
Nice.
I've
done that a few times. Didn't turn out so good.
The word Ramdan for, like, the really delicious noodles that she makes was created by the translator for the film and is a dish consisting of two different types of instant noodles, black bean and spicy seafood flavor. The dish is actually called Japogiri. And was too difficult to translate because it is a combination of two brand names. So they just came up with something else.
That sounds like ramen.
Yeah. Bong often demonstrated the performance for the actors, so all they had to do was follow his demonstration.
Wow.
I know.
Kind of nice, also kind of not nice.
So true. the song that Kim Ki-jung and Kim Ki-woo sang before entering the Park home is actually a common song in Korea used to help school children memorize things.
Hmm.
So that's interesting. This is really interesting.
That's a cute little song.
The water pressure was tested in the scene where Kim Ki-jung smokes a cigarette on top of the overflowing toilet. They had to determine just how strong the sewer water had to be. Bong told GQ the special effects team prepared a lot to create that scene.
Aw, that was a good scene.
That was a really good scene.
Very sad.
And I now have some Reddit theories.
Yes, please, please, please.
So, this one is from Holly C. Fossey.
Okay.
She has two questions that I thought were very interesting. So, when Moon Gwang was on the outdoor phone with Mrs. Kim standing in the rain, she seemed to be laughing nervously. Does anyone have theories on why she was laughing and if it ties in with Kevin's laughing sickness from brain injury? And also, Moon Gwang never does explain the lacerations on her face. Her face is really beat up.
That's true. And, we never know about that.
Did the loan sharks get to her, or do we just never know what happened?
I always thought it was the loan sharks.
I always thought so, too. What do you think about the laughing? Why do you think she was laughing whenever she was outside? It was very odd.
I think she was probably really nervous. I mean, how long had her husband been in there without food? Like 4 or 5 days?
Yeah.
And water?
Yeah,
he's true. Probably drinking out of, like, the toilet.
Yeah, she's probably, like, just freaking out.
Yeah, so I feel like she was probably just so worried.
Yeah.
And then the lacerations, I assumed it was the loan sharks. Are there theories on it?
No.
Dang. Ah, nobody?
A lot of these are just questions. A lot of them don't actually have theories.
Okay.
So this one, though, is really interesting. I didn't even think about this. What are your thoughts on the meeting of the three dogs, Zuni, Barry, and Fufu? Each one appears as a Kim is introduced into the family. The first dog is seen when Kevin is meeting with Mrs. Park, when we see the second dog appear when Jessica is being recommended, and lastly, when the father is being recommended as a driver, we have already met the third good boy.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know if it means anything.
But they mention the dogs so much. There's so much, like, focus on them.
It might be that...
Or is it just, like, an example of their wealth? Because they're all, like purebred dogs.
It seems like they care about their dogs more than they care about people.
Yeah, definitely. This person, this was the one where they were wondering why, Dasong didn't tell his parents about the people in the basement. And, again, like, a lot of the theories state that, like, it's how the rich see the poor.
Yeah.
And how they don't care and they turn a blind eye even though they know that the poor are suffering.
It's like when Mr. Kim is driving Mrs. Park home after the rain the night before that completely took out everything that he owns.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, the rain made the weather so nice, hardly any pollution.
And then she, like, covers her nose at his smell.
She smells it.
Oh, it's so sad.
This is interesting. It's from Collider.com. It's just a little, like, talking about the movie. The bleakness of the ending is that the only way to free Mr. Kim is impossible. Granted, he could just turn himself in, but then he'd just go to another prison or he'd get the death penalty, so he may as well stay in the basement. The prison of wealth is what entraps the Kims in the first place. Yes, they are parasites in a sense, since they feed off the wealthy Park family, but the lavishness of the Park's wealth was never going to come to the Kims.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of wealth becomes both a fantasy and a prison for the Kim family, something they can chase, but they'll never achieve.
It's almost limiting them.
Yeah, they're stuck where they are. Mr. Kim in a basement, and Ki-woo only able to look at the house from a distance. These days, there's a lot of talk about income inequality, which is an oddly hopeful phrase because it implies we can just rebalance the scales somehow through economic programs or government intervention. Parasite is far more pessimistic, arguing that the economic immobility is the new normal, and that those who are born poor will die poor, and those who are born rich will die rich. The fantasy of upward economic mobility is Ki-woo's fantasy. If it was just as simple as getting rich and buying this house, why would he have been living in a slum in the first place?
So true.
It's a nice thought that he could become rich and buy the house to free his father, and they'd all live happily ever after, but that's never going to happen. We're all trapped where we are. I mean, here's the thing. Economically, in the United States, at least, you are pretty much only likely to go up or down one rung from where your parents are.
Yes.
So if your parents are, let's say, middle class, you might go to upper middle class, you might go to lower middle class. If your parents are in poverty, maybe you'll do slightly better than that. That just puts you on the edge of poverty, which statistically is actually a worse place to be than in poverty.
Yeah, because you don't get benefits at all.
Benefits at all. And those benefits help greatly.
Yes.
But in Korea especially, a lot of people have compared Korea to kind of India, where it's this caste system, where it's almost like, maybe in India, it's quite literally, you are not allowed to move up. Like, there's laws mandating that you will not move up. You can't even get certain jobs. But in Korea, it's like, it might as well be that.
Uh-huh.
Where it's not legally putting you down, but
the rules are socially, so ingrained into the society.
Exactly. The socially, you're not going to be moving up.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. So, I think that... I don't know. I think that... Not gonna happen.
Not gonna happen. I don't think it happens for him.
I don't think it does either. Very sad. Which is sad, because it just means his dad dies down there one day.
Yep. Or gets caught.
Or gets caught. Yeah, who knows? You know what I mean? Maybe a similar thing happens or somebody finds him.
Yeah.
Somebody catches him. I wonder if there's, like, a way we can look up. I want to know, like, everything in Parasite. Like, what? I wonder about the maybe, like, symbolism in Parasite.
I know, symbols, yeah.
Because I feel like there, it's just, like...
Everywhere.
Yeah.
I heard that the peach could be, like, compared to the forbidden fruit. Like, they say it's, the like, it's forbidden in our house.
Mm-hmm.
And how, like, being rich is the forbidden fruit for the Kims.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna read... Oh, this is interesting. Okay. In the opening, let's see, modern, here are some, I think, some themes of what we're talking on. Oh, whoa, this is, symbolism explained, instant noodles, language, basement. Okay. Parasites inhabit a place where they don't belong. They're greedy, hard to extinguish, and they're always craving for more. Right? So, well, like we said, Bong Joon-ho saw a parasite everywhere.
Yep.
Let's go. So, modern capitalism, the rich versus the poor.
Mm-hmm.
In the opening scene of Parasite, the family of jobless adults are wrapping hundreds of pizza boxes a day. When the pizza shop staff says they will pay, their pay will be reduced because of the terrible quality, the family gets angry, yet still seeks for part-time opportunities. This is the first glimpse of their parasitic quality. And what I think is interesting is, the boxes were bad. 1/4 of them was bad.
Because of the dad.
Because of the dad. Because he was trying to make more money by taking a shortcut, right?
Yeah.
He was trying to do it in this fast way that would give them more boxes and give them more money. But in the end, it ruined 1/4 of their boxes. But even then, you can still see how badly they want a job.
Mm-hmm.
And they still just don't get it.
Yeah.
Then the rich, handsome friend of Ki-woo enters as the first sign of class inequality. And what I think is really interesting is as soon as he enters, they're automatically embarrassed by their home. They say, yes. Oh, you didn't have to come here. And he's like, oh, it's fine. It's fine. He doesn't even care.
Yeah, he doesn't even care. But they're just like, we don't want you to see this place.
My guess is this guy is more middle class.
Yeah.
Maybe upper middle class. Yeah. Like he's going to university. He's going to be a student. But he knows Ki-woo and he understands that Ki-woo's poor and doesn't really care.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing more of a middle class.
Mm-hmm.
He brings the family a rock symbolizing fortune, and Ki-woo offers the Ki-woo the tutor job. His kindness reflects a paradox in the capitalist community. The rich can befriend the poor, but the gap stays and widens by time. Ki-woo's friend does not regard him, someone lacking academic success and money, as qualified for the job, but he can pretend. From their conversation, it was implied that Ki-woo can only become part of the upper class through pretense and deception.
But he also knows English very well.
Yeah, he's smart.
Yeah, he's very smart.
And his friend even says, you're way smarter than 90% of the people in my university, but you're poor.
Yeah, so you're not there.
And that's why you can't get this job, which is why he says, just lie, who cares? But of course, this is bad. The Kim family was portrayed as a greedy bunch. They pretend to be capable and friendly, but their constant scheming is like the smell that follows around. Some question why they don't look for jobs if they're eloquent and clever. The simple answer could be a lack of proper education, and their laziness could probably not survive Korea's harsh corporate reality. But the rich Park family enables the tragedy. Mrs. Park, in particular, represents how the upper class people could be overprotected growing up, leading to a lack of life experiences they have and making deception more reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something, too. I don't think it's saying, oh, rich people are stupid. I think it's saying rich people are naive.
Yes.
Because they've never had to deal with, like, harsh realities.
Yeah, and especially these people seem like they're very, like, born into rich families. Yeah. They talk a lot about fitting in.
Yeah.
Like, Kevin talks a lot about how he thinks Jessica fits in and he doesn't.
Yeah. So some symbolism of instant noodles with steak. The scene in which the Park family returns from camping and asks the housekeeper, Mrs. Kim, to cook instant noodles for the youngest boy, the song, reveal the strange gap and overlapping similarities between the rich and the poor. Usually, rich people eat expensive, organic food, so they wouldn't eat something like this. The mom adds sirloin on top of this cheap instant dish just to leave the signature of being rich.
Mm-hmm.
No one really eats it that way. It was my creation, said Bong. To add steak on top of the cheap instant noodles is an act of qualifying and justifying Mrs. Park's enjoyment of the lower-class dish.
Mm-hmm.
The rich, despite their wealth, would still crave for things that are below their social status, but with their own imagination. The dirty underwear that disgusts the Park couple also becomes their sexual fantasy at one point.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. It's like, you want what the rich what poor people have, but you want to make it, you, it's like, what is it? It happens all the time where, like, you adopt it into your own thing and pretend, like, make cultural it wealthy. It's kind of, yes, but more like class appropriation.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Where you, like, make something, okay, I'm going to use, like, Champion, the brand Champion.
Uh-huh.
That used to be sold at Walmart, and, like, poor people would buy it and wear it. And rich people would make fun of poor people for wearing it. So then poor people stopped wearing it because they would get made fun of for Champion. And now Champion costs hundreds of dollars because rich people decided that it was cool now.
That's wild.
The look doesn't look that much different.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Champion suddenly got cute. It's just that rich people decided that it was going to be for them. And so now poor people can't have it anymore.
Uh-huh.
And that's like the kind of thing that this is.
Yeah, I agree.
So language. The first time meeting Ki-Woo, Miss Park asserts her preference for those who receive higher education. The more westernized the person is, the better. That's another thing, too. They really...
they really, like...
care about America. They constantly say, like, oh, it came from America, it's good. And you're like, haha, I'm from America, let me tell you.
All right.
Back in the Kim's basement apartment, they speak in slangs, not to mention their lack of table etiquette. However, once they enter the Park's home, the language they use becomes completely different, mixing in English words and softening the tone to fit in. Language is a way to distinguish them from the rest. In South Korea's case, English is seen as a privileged and restricted language that should only be accessible to the upper class, the educated.
Interesting.
The semi-basement only offers a partial view. The Kim live in a dirty old semi-basement where the windows offer a partial view of the outside world. They can always look out like the frogs in the shallow well or the pests that hate sunlight and preferred staying where they're accustomed to. Leave the windows open, Mr. Kim, the father of the household, said, and demanded to let the overwhelming pesticide clean up his home, too. But, oh, goodness. But who are the pests? The camera frames become much wider when we enter the Park's family mansion, and in contrast, is bright and almost dust-free.
Mm-hmm.
The only basement in the house is the cellar for storing wine, or other parasites, for that matter. The invisible line. We see countless visible and invisible lines in Parasite. In the slum, the immense amount of cable lines blockading the view reflects the confinement of the lower class. The structural lines are more prominent where the shot follows the parasites going down a stair, emphasizing the descent into chaos. Division is a commonplace in modern society, and the invisible line is drawn by dialogue. Mr. Park says in the film is they draw a line over a sophisticated world and don't let anyone cross it. They're not interested in the outside world, the subway, and the people who might smell. They want to push everyone outside that line, and they want to remain safe behind it. People pretend to be nice to navigate the society, like Mr. Park making small conversations with Mr. Kim in the car without any intention of making a genuine connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like they keep saying through their actions, we're not friends.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll be nice to you so that you don't get upset at me and so you see nothing wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
But behind the scenes, I'm disgusted by you.
Yeah. Oof.
I know. So... I have some reviews. We're doing good. I have some reviews. Hoo boy!
Hoo boy. I'm excited for these.
Do you want semi-racist review or really classist review? Both are long. Both are bad.
I don't know. Let's do classist.
Okay. I'll give you the lowdown on the racist one. It's basically just a white guy being like, I'm married to an Asian woman, and if I were Asian, I would be upset.
No!
That this one, just because there's Asians in it. Yeah.
No!
Okay. So, this one's really classist. Also, there was one I found, it's just really short, but it was about, it was a 10 out of 10, and it was saying that Canada was just like this, and that Canada had a caste system, and I was like, huh, I did not know that Canada had a caste system. Okay. So this is actually not rated. It's written by a person named Logic Is Everything.
Ah. I see.
Yes. Extremely absurd without basic logic. Logic is everything after all.
After all.
Huge Oscar winner. What a joke. There's no way, or simply not enough, to convince me that this four-member family could have so easily conspired a big scam to wreck a rich family. The two screenplay writers, one of them was the director Bong, simply borrowed the mass majority of feelings of the 99% struggling Koreans who deeply hate the upper 1%. They simply borrowed the feelings of 99% of the population! What? That's insane! Who deeply hate the upper 1% rich class people in Korea and made up a story that rendered a catharsis masturbation-like feel-good opportunity for poor, self-righteous, self-justified, self-indulgent revenge on the rich class.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, buddy. This person must be rich. Because they do not hear themselves. At the beginning of the movie, this low-life, four-member family was at bay and struggled to a barely survived condition. The husband-slash-father was unemployed for a very long time. The woman was nothing but a mean, heartless woman. The son and daughter had failed the college entry exams for so many times. This helpless and hopeless family couldn't simply become a well-practiced con artist family overnight. I think it points out multiple times actually how good they are at conning people.
Yeah, like especially from the beginning it talks about it, like from the pizza boxes, how good they are at like, oh, hey, let's spin this around and like say, can I have a job?
Exactly. And also Jessica is great at forging documents. It mentions that.
Yeah.
Then we learn that he's really good at English. It's really, you only need a couple skills with each person. Granted, the dad and the mom don't have that many skills, but if their kids do,
yeah,
that's all they need.
Yeah, and the kids are the ones that get them in.
Exactly. Okay. If they were such great scammers, they would not have fallen so low and so helpless for such a long time. Also, being a con artist is kind of a skill you learn if you're poor.
Yeah. You know what I mean? You learn it because you have to.
Exactly. Nobody that's rich learns to be a con... Well, that's not true. I shouldn't say that. Rich people also know how to be con artists. White-collar crime, baby.
They just commit different kinds of
different
crimes.
Different kinds of crimes. They were just like you and me who don't have money to afford a dignified basic living standard. They would not be possible to suddenly become extra con artists so easy and so soon. The most shameful scenario was the screenplay writers slash directors who made the rich people look so stupid, naive, and emotionally fragile, and so easy to be conned. They completely overlooked the fact why and how rich people became rich.
Oh my god.
They definitely weren't born into it.
No, no. Because only smart people are rich.
That's so true.
No, yeah.
The differences between the rich and the poor are many. But usually, it's because the rich people are smarter, more intelligent,
no!
more cunning, 1,000 times sharper than the poor. They are not so easy to be manipulated, conned, scammed, or swindled, and otherwise they wouldn't become rich and successful. Yet this stereotypical, shallow screenplay simply overlooked these facts and made the rich husband and wife so stupid and so easy to be manipulated by a bunch of losers who didn't even know how to make a basic living or how to pass the college exams.
I hate this person.
The screenplay made the rich wife a fragile, naive, shallow, emotional wreck, but totally refused to admit that rich wives are usually split hair sharp. Otherwise, they would not be able to handle their social status.
Ugh.
It's so hard to be rich. The husband in this movie also showed that he's a hardworking, super smart, self-made businessman and entrepreneur. He should not be so easy to be manipulated by a bunch of losers. I also want to say, the husband very rarely knows what's going on. I'm not denying that the husband is smart.
Yeah.
Because we actually see that he's smart quite a bit. But he is disinterested in matters of the house.
Yes, he doesn't care.
That's what he has a wife for.
Yeah, and a housekeeper.
And his wife isn't that sharp. She's addicted to pills. Yet, this movie, again, simply overlooked the realistic fact and made these couple an easy moronic target by the scammers. In summary, zero probability and highly unlikely. The long-term, helpless four-member losers were absolutely impossible to become a well-experienced, well-organized, smart grifters slash swindlers. How possible these four lamers could be so abruptly so suddenly become so smart, so organized, so skillful overnight to carry out their scam step by step? It's against the basic logic and absolute impossible. The director slash screenplay writers just use the majority of poor people's hate slash resent slash bitter feelings against the minority rich people because psychology manipulated the poor audience to have a catharsis moment in the movie theaters. If the audience in Cannes Film Festival gave a 10-minute standing ovation, it only showed the majority of the audience were also the majority of the poor. Oh yeah, the Cannes Film Festival. So easy to get in.
So easy to get in, you know.
Yeah, they're you don't just... need money at all to go to the Cannes Film Festival.
No, yeah, you can just get on there in minimum wage.
Yeah, yeah, I mean...
Doesn't
I
matter.
I only know poor people who go to the Cannes Film Festival.
Me too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. They finally got the opportunity to have a small window to vent their bitterness against the rich, so they were generous to award this one-way street movie the grand prize. I don't know why the Korean movie makers are so obsessed with this kind of con artist slash imposter slash swindler slash fraud genre movies. Agassi, Handmade in 2016, that movie, is almost the same like this, and Sucker, but that 2016 movie is even lower and abject than this one. Even that movie spent too much energy on the lesbian lovemaking scenes. These two are basically the same, highly unlikely and absolutely impossible. Same crap, different title. Only people without any logic, thinking ability would enjoy them. To me, both of these movies are just a torture to watch. There are so many other Korean movies, all like these two suckers, so I think it's time to call off making such stupid movies. I'm a poor guy, yet I don't hate rich people, but envy them. I'm also a certified lifetime loser, but I willingly admit that most rich people are definitely smarter than me, and there's no way I can manipulate them and con them out of even 1 cent out of their pocket.
It sounds like one of those poor people who just fetishize the rich.
I know. I can't tell if it's satire.
I don't know.
But it was buried so far in the one-star reviews.
That makes me think that it might not be.
I know. I really looked for it, and I was like, wow. I don't know.
I don't know if it is. I'm leaning towards it's not.
You never know these days.
It's true. What would you give this film?
I give it a 9 out of 10.
I would give it a 10 out of 10.
I like it.
I like it a lot. It's very good. You should watch it if you haven't seen it. You shouldn't be listening to this if you haven't seen it.
Reprimand. Yeah, stop that. But also, if you like, you can play it through to give the listen. But, like,
yeah.
You shouldn't actually listen.
Yeah, just, like, fast forward just so just it like, shows us that you like listened.
Scroll to the end, baby.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Bye.